nervous, but I've seen my chair move. I was like, move it forward. Yeah.
Joey Wiesenberg and the Hadar Ensemble. They co-created these stories through wordless nigunim, these wordless melodies. And these melodies that don't actually have words, these nigunim, nigunim, N-I-G-G-U-N-I-M. So they are wordless melodies. And lenagen in Hebrew means to play, as in David played upon the harp. So the Hebrew for when David plays upon the harp is David hayam menagen al hakinur. David was playing upon the harp. And so these melodies are really, we spoke about the blessing and the brecha, the well, yesterday. These archetypal narrative melodies that come to us from Psalms, that the Hasidic tradition in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries imagined what David and those who co-created the Psalms, what they were actually playing, the songs that they had no idea, but they felt into these words. And at the courts of the Hasidic masters, it was a privilege indeed to be sat around the Shabbat Tish, the Sabbath table. Tish, Tish in Yiddish, is a Yiddish word actually. See, this is my hack for today, there's a post-it. T-I-S-C-H is a Yiddish word, it means a table. We're going to improvise. This is our table this morning. We're also going to draw the thread from yesterday's learning together. We spoke about that moment as a nine-year-old when I hid behind the tapestry. For those who are coming for the first time this morning, welcome. I'm Rabbi Samuel Klein. My role is Director of Jewish Community Engagement at the Jewish Federation for Greater Seattle, and it's a great privilege to be here at Holden. Thank you to staff at Holden, who I'm seeing here, who have been so gracious and welcoming to us as faculty. And yesterday we spoke about this idea of the educator as a narrative weaver, a weaver of stories, and that the educational experience is much like a tapestry in that there are threads wending their way hither and thither, and some of them resolve, but many of them do not resolve. And that living the questions in an educational experience without the urge to come to a chocolate box with a red ribbon, or a blue ribbon, or whatever ribbon, picks as your fancy, that is to resist the urge to interpret, to analyze, and to stay with noticing and describing. And some of our faculty were on the porch yesterday, and you know, several of us were just reminiscing about the teachings, and we just realized that our words we were using, noticing deeply, describing, they were just bubbling up from our several teachings that we'd all offered into this space. So there is a there. So living the questions now, it's a phrase that comes from the poet Rainer Maria Rilke in Letters to a Young Poet, 1913. And it's a phrase, live the questions now, like that model of the tapestry that has been with me as an educator all through the years. Try to resist the urge to come to interpretation quickly. Instead, marinate in the questions. Be curious about curiosity itself. And so the Hasidim, the courts who crafted these songs, these song narratives, that's where they were also. And so I'd like us to make believe this morning at 10:30 in the morning as if, ke'ilu, again that word from yesterday, as if, behaving as if, seeing ourselves as if we are sat around a table at the third meal on Shabbat. Now, Shabbat, the day of rest in the Jewish calendar, and the Jewish week is on Saturday. The Christian Sabbath is on the Sunday. And on Shabbat, there is an arc of 25 hours from sundown to three stars in the sky. And at sundown, in the 17th, maybe even the 16th century actually, in Safad, in the north of Israel, just hands up those who've been to Israel. Anyone? Okay. If you've been on a tour of Israel, in the north, there was a mystical city of Safad. And in that city, they gathered after the persecutions, the Spanish kingdom of Ferdinand and Isabella, after the expulsion of the Jews in 1492, many rabbis and preachers and mystics arrive in the north of Israel, all at the same time. It's a bit like Holden Village, actually. You know, it's a bit like everyone comes to the mountains at the same time, and in this place are people from disparate walks of Jewish life who have all marinated deeply in those song narratives of the Jewish people. They're not Hasidim, they're not Hasidic masters, but they are the architects of what's known as the Kabbalah. Bless you. So they are the architects of what's known as the Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah was lost for many centuries, and it was revived in this town in Safad in the north. And still to this day, it's on the itinerary of tour groups in Israel to go and visit the city. And so what they would do on the Sabbath Eve is they would go, these rabbis would go together, and they would go out into the fields dressed in white to greet the Sabbath bride. They saw the Sabbath as a union between God and Israel, and that Sabbath was the crucible, the container, in which that union happened. It was a mystical union, it was an erotic union, It was a union in which, for a moment in the week, the cares and the wares of the week fall away, and instead we are able to be with our stillness and to be with ourselves and to look into ourselves. But not in isolation, actually. Not in isolation. The technology was precisely in community. Sabbath is a moment in time. However, it is a moment in time around other people. And that was what they innovated. In their imagination, they imagined that, yes, Sabbath was the seventh day. And it was the seventh day with community. Why? Why was it so important to be in community? To be witnessed. To be seen. And all through the week, we're talking, we're in trading, we're involved in the in masava matan. In Hebrew, it basically means commerce. And on Sabbath, what is the language that we speak to one another? And the mystics understood this as song. It's a unifying language. And in order to be more unifying, they created these wordless melodies so that those who did not know Hebrew could understand a little bit about where the source of the melody was, but then quickly access the heart of the melody. And I find this very powerful. It comes from the Genesis myth, and I'd like to share that myth with you, because as yesterday, the Exodus of Egypt is so powerful for the teaching around the sabbatical year, as we learned, this idea of emancipating ourselves, of liberating ourselves, of seeing opportunities for liberation, wherever there can be. So too, the other pillar of the sabbatical cycle is the Sabbath. And the Sabbath is about internal release, hearing the call to release internally. And in the same way as the land needs release, we need to be able to take our foot off the gas pedal, as it were, of mapping and projecting our own needs into the land, onto the land. So similarly, when we sit in front of others, it's often the mirror of, what are they thinking of me? Do they like me? Do they not like me? Am I saying something interesting or funny? Am I an important person in their eyes? Do I have standing and status here? Really, truly, they're smiling at me, but really I know they think I'm a nudge. So we have the committee that meets upstairs. I have a committee that meets upstairs. I speak to myself first. I have a committee that meets upstairs. And that committee sits in judgment on my exchanges with individuals. And the curious things happen. I've met a person for 10 minutes and already I've judged what that expression of, you know, whether they've said to me in the way that I want them to say to me, good morning, you know, is caring and generous and open-hearted, or they couldn't care less and they're on their way. And noticing this urge to interpret the exchanges that we have through words, through language, it's a practice. And the masters knew about this. And so they offered the crucible of song in which to just allow for whatever is there to be there, and to sift through the song, to notice it, much like one might notice in a meditative practice, for the Hasidic masters on Shabbat, because a space had opened up, to notice at the close of Shabbat what had happened in that day. What had arisen for you on the Sabbath day? And as the twilight hours neared, and as the sun sets over the horizon, and as we gather together around the table, and maybe there's a little bit of a l'chaim, a bit of herring. Maybe there's a little slivovitz and some herring. There's not an abundant meal. The meal, such as it is the meal of song. So while there is a tradition of honoring the Sabbath through delights, you know, all sorts of wonderful things that make us feel happy, food-wise, there is also the delight of song. And the valence of song contains in it both joy and sorrow. It is both and. And what I'd like to offer you this morning is to just go into two melodies. We're going to go two melodies. And that is what we're going to sit with. So just in case you're wondering what the next hour and a half is going to be is, we're going to sit with a melody for 20 minutes. Okay? 20 minutes. And in that time, I'm going to offer some framing for that melody. And then we're going to be with it. And I might offer some adjustments, and I might offer us to move in certain ways with it. But for 20 minutes of our time this morning, I'm going to ask us, as best we can, to silence our digital friends, if they are with us, and to allow for, gosh, this is boring, I can't believe I came to this session. 10 minutes, are you kidding me? It's going to be another 10 minutes of this. Really? Or, wow, like, this is really doing it for me, or this is really not doing it for me, but I'm really going to sit here, or, okay, I'm going to check out a bit, but I'm going to, whatever it is, I'm just going to ask one thing, that for 20 minutes you stay in the room, unless you really need to be elsewhere. That's the only unreasonable request that I have, okay? Is that whatever is emerging is absolutely accurately yours to feel. A story. So, in my early 20s, I came into a relationship with Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks of blessed memory. And he was one of the first teachers who took me on a walk and talk. I mentioned yesterday there were a couple of teachers of mine who took me on a walk and talk. And one of them was in high school, and the other one was Rabbi Jonathan, Lord Jonathan Sacks. And Rabbi Sacks went for a walk with me in a place called Forte di Marmi in Italy. I was there for Passover, and we were celebrating Passover. I remember it very clearly because it was the year the Queen Mother passed away. And he had to rush to make a statement. So I remember it, that was the year. I believe it was 2001, 2002. And he was very accessible, and he wasn't quite as stratospheric as he became at that time. And he was chief rabbi of the British Commonwealth. And I asked him if he would mind us learning together, because we were there for 8 days. And he said, well, why don't we take a walk along the beach? And so there he was in his jaunty hat and his tweed jacket. He absolutely had the jaunty hat and the tweed jacket. Absolutely wow. Existed. He actually also smoked a pipe, but he didn't, because it was Yom Tov. It was a holiday, so he wasn't smoking a pipe on that day. But he could have. I could have seen him. And we went for a walk. And he was talking to me about a forthcoming book called The Dignity of Difference, which I don't know if anyone has read it or seen it. I feel this is one of his most important books, The Dignity of Difference. The reason I think it's most important is because it was a book that he had to rewrite several times, actually, because there were some passages in that book that rubbed up against certain privileges and feelings within the Jewish community, particularly the Orthodox Jewish community of which I'm a part, about what you can and cannot say. So a sentence on page 64 or 65 that goes like this: God spoke to Jews through Judaism, to Christians through Christianity, and to Muslims through Islam. Period. That, for example. Just that. And so he spoke to me about this book that he was writing, and he called it Exorcising Plato's Ghost, his chapter. And his chapter was really about, what is it like to see the face of God in the other? Really, really, what is it like? Not to think denominationally, not to think about my theology and your theology, not to think about my Eucharist and your Eucharist, or my Passover and your Passover, not to think, oh, I'm in the Yemenite tradition and you're in the German Orthodox tradition, we've got nothing to say to each other. There are all so many reasons for us to other one another. And he was trying to figure out, within the Jewish tradition, denominationally, why is it that the Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox Jews just have such a challenging time of speaking with one another? How can we use language that is inclusive? And that's a word that he was trying to work with. I think that the Hasidic masters had it down. There was never any real question around theology. In fact, there was never any interest in talking about theology specifically around the Shabbos tish, around the Shabbos table. The interest was in singing together. The interest was in creating an interiority of experience through the communal lens. So, how do we stop doing this and start doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's something that he spoke about on his walk and talk with me. And of course, I didn't really understand or know what was going to happen for him in 6 months' time. He almost had to step down from being chief rabbi. For those who want to go on the web to see the story of this, it all happened in 2005, and it was really a nadir moment and a critical moment for Anglo-Jewry at that time. So for me, as a younger person looking up at Rabbi Sacks as a mentor, I saw someone really struggling with articulating a life of faith that was broader than a very narrow Möbius strip called truth. Mm-hmm. And so I offer that story because I think that singing together as a practice, it's not a kumbaya, as a kind of like a good feeling. It isn't that. It is, in fact, a deep practice of hearing my inner voice through the song and looking out at others through that song and seeing how we can be connected as a community. So we're going to play a game called Ba. Can I ask the inner circle to please stand? Yes, yes. Okay, so please number 1, 2. Oh.
2.
3, 4.
1, 2, only 1, 2. Oh. 1, 2, 1.
1, 2, 1.
1, 2, 1. 2, 1. 2. 1.
Great, number 2s, please sit down. Okay. Okay, so for those who are joining for the first time today, yesterday we played a game called Ba. And Ba is kind of the understory of this practice, this educational practice. It is a way of drawing the threads together visually. Okay, so trying to deploy different modes of approaching this work through art, through physical expression, through song, through learning text. And this is a way of just us noticing and describing what's going on. Because of the volume of people in this room today, we're just going to do the following. We're going to play 2 rounds of Ba with the 1s and the 2s. I'm going to ask just yourself to notice what you're seeing when we played this game called Ba. Ba is just literally passing a ball. Yesterday it was an imaginary ball. Today, because we're playing slightly more advanced Ba, We're gonna have 2. I have borrowed Holden's baseballs here. So just notice, please, what's going on in the circle, okay? And I'm gonna scan the room after just for some noticing. Okay, so tempo. Okay, so the outer, we're gonna hit a tempo. So here's a tempo for the outer. Yeah, so the people in this inner circle, stay put. The outer group, let's go, let's do this. Okay, keep it going. Okay, we're going to pass it to this tempo, okay? Quickly, so soup, hot potato. As soon as it's hit our hands, go. Thank you. Now as we go around, we're going to say Ba, okay? Same tempo, so let's go. Ba. Okay, let's scan. What do you notice?
Direction.
Okay. Did I give any instruction?
No.
Interesting. Okay. Yes, Gary?
Once again, they did not hand it off, they threw it.
Okay, thank you. Jack?
I think the tempo was more challenging. They got it.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a lot of focus. No one wants to be the one that dropped it.
Okay. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to do an adjustment downwards. So to your point, okay? So, but I'm going to do 2 balls. Okay? So we're going to go one level. So we're going to go... Ba. 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 Ba, 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 okay, 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 thank you. Okay. Scanning. What are we noticing?
Anxiety was higher.
Say again?
The anxiety around the circle.
The anxiety, okay. 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 Yes.
My name is Mary and they didn't know where to look.
Okay. Okay. My name is Mary and they didn't know where to look. Okay. Yes.
And they apologized.
And they apologized. Great. And they apologized. Okay, number twos. Please sit down. Thank you. Number twos. Okay. Adjustment. Adjustment is now you can actually throw the ball as it comes around. Let's do it once around, both times. But you can look across. And throw and share the ball, toss the ball. Just one thing: make eye contact before you do that. and none of this, right? You knew what I was going to do, right? None of this, right? So it's just under like this. Okay, so just make eye contact with the person, so that the person knows that you're throwing it to them, and let's try and stick with the tempo outside. Okay, here goes. Right. Can I have one more person here? Okay. Okay. Bam. Bam. Okay. 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 So, something's happening. I'm sensing in the space that is the communication between the outside and the inner. So who would like to offer a suggestion as to how we can maintain the connection between the inner circle and those who are on the outside? What would be a suggestion? How can we maintain that focus?
Talk out loud. Rhythm.
Say again?
Speak out loud.
Speak out loud. So say...
Like a rhythm. One and two. And
okay. So one and two. So we're going to try and say one and two and one and two and... Fine. Let's do it. Okay. So we're going to say we're one and two. Great. Those on the inside, okay? Eye contact. Very critically important. Okay? Go. Okay. Okay, and this is the last time. Let's go.
One.
And two, and one, 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 and two, and one. And one and two and one and two and one and two and one and two and one and two. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So ba, thank you. So ba can be played in so many ways and. It's not so much a game as in a noticing practice, in my view. It came to me through Lincoln Center Institute when I trained there in the summers between 2012 and 2016 as a teaching artist and with Eric Booth, who is truly a tremendous educator. And ba was something that we played in front of every session for at least 10 minutes. We had 6 sessions a day for 4 days through the summer in New York. And we played this game, and we played it in different ways. And I'm offering it into the space as a gift that I've experienced to go deeply into what it means to notice where others are at. And it is exactly the same, I believe, practice as singing together. Because we're not singing in a solipsistic way, in a way where we're just kind of interior. And instead, the singing that we're going to be doing together now, hopefully, is being able to make eye contact around the room and seeing people as we do this. What do we do with our eyes when we sing? Oh my gosh. How long can we look at another person as we're singing? It's kind of challenging. So for those in the gallery, I'm just Just look into the space. For those who are here, if you make eye contact, you're invited to hold eye contact with someone else. If it doesn't feel comfortable for you, eyes to the ground. You don't need to close your eyes. This is not a spiritual discipline in that way in this morning. I'm offering it as a gift for us to be able just to listen to what the notes of this song do for us. And I'd like to share a reflection by Dr. Oliver Sacks, another Sacks, who had a huge impact on me. And for those who have the handouts, there are 35 of them, so we're going to try and share in the room. He is speaking as a doctor who's working with a range of different clients, and one of his clients has Parkinson's and used to be a singer and used to be able to move freely as a dancer through the world. And this is what his client says one day to him. Frances D is her name. She said that she'd become graceless with the onset of Parkinsonism, and that her movements had become wooden, mechanical, like a robot or doll, that she had lost her former naturalness and musicness of movement, that, in a word, she'd become unmusicked. Fortunately, she added, the disease was accompanied by its own cure. I raised an eyebrow. Music, she said. As I am unmusicked, I must be re-musicked. Then she said, songs, tunes I knew from years ago, catchy tunes, rhythmic tunes, the sort I love to dance to. With this sudden imagining of music, this coming of spontaneous inner music, the power of motion, action would suddenly return, and the sense of substance restored personality and reality. So what she's claiming here is that if she could access songs from her childhood and could sing them, in some ways, this was actually inhabit her body, and she could move in a different way. If she could actually access that music, put herself in the place of her childhood self, then she could move differently. Mm-hmm. Such is the power of the imagination. And Oliver Sacks goes on to talk about how this client actually managed to, through a series of strategies, access more and more of these childhood songs. Doesn't mean that the Parkinson's went away, but it means that there was some way of feeling into that new mode of being, but with something that brought her joy amidst all of the hardship. This is Joey Wiesenberg. This nigun comes to us from a prayer, an inflection, in community. Hinei matobu manaim shevet achim gam yachad. How wonderful it is together, to how wonderful it is for us to sit together here in community. But there are no words to it. So instead, the call is just to reflect on what it is for you to be here at Holden at this time, to be here in this space at this time, to be here sitting with these people at this time, to be in a moment. If you find that you'd like to write something, or some words come for you as we go through this, I offer that opportunity as well. If you'd like to take a pen, piece of paper. We're going to be here for 20 minutes to 11:20. So just to let you know. So get in comfortable. If you're not body comfortable sitting as you are through this time, please do stand, walk around the space, or be elsewhere, or stand. Please be as comfortable as you can be in these chairs. If you want to sit on the floor, if you want to lie on the floor at a certain point also, however it is that your body calls you to be, to sit, to lie, to stand in these 20 minutes as we're singing. The only unreasonable request is, if you can, please to be in the room during the next 20 minutes. Are there any questions about this? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, now an adjustment next time. A little bit louder if you can. If that's comfortable for you.
Okay.
adjustment, which is put your body into it. If you'd like to sway, if you want to click, if you want to tap your knees, if you want to get up, now is the time to do that. If you want to stand next to someone or you feel comfortable, that's also good. Or take your space. Thank you. There we are. The origin story of song in the Jewish tradition, but especially in this mystical Hasidic tradition, is the origin story of creation. It is the very moment that the first human was given neshama, was given divine spirit, which also, in Hebrew, neshama means neshima, breath. The very same word that means soul in Hebrew also means breath or spirit, right? So neshama can also mean spirit. Spirit and breath share the same root in Hebrew. And that is crucially important. In sources 4 through 6, for those who have the text packets and would like to share with your neighbor, again, like yesterday, in order to save paper and not just print many copies, all of these copies will be available through Holden, and my email, by the way, is on the front of every one of these, but I will make all copies available to Holden as PDFs of all of these sessions so that people can take them away. Please, if you would like, they will be available with the Holden Education Office. But I can also, if you want to be in touch with me directly, please do. So we in the Jewish tradition, we say on Shabbat morning, Sabbath prayers, specifically on the Sabbath, we talk about the soul, the breath of every living being, being drawn towards praise. Praise of the created order, that there is order, that not all is chaos. That is very central to the idea that the texts of Genesis, which appear absolutely chaotic, relationships that go like threads in each and every way, people miscommunicating all over the place, does not start the Bible, or at least the Torah. We use a phrase, an acronym, Tanakh. In Hebrew, that means Torah, the five books of Moses, Nevi'im, the prophets, and Ketuvim, scriptures. So in the Bible, within the Jewish tradition, that is the body of work. Apocrypha, pseudepigrapha, the New Testament, that is outside of what is called the Bible for the Jewish tradition. So I just wanted to thank a person came up to me afterwards and said, oh, the Bible, and maybe you want to just check in with that word. And that is for us, it is just a recognition of some core texts that inform our Jewish practice, and those are they. That's important because when we come to pray as Jewish folk in community, what's important is to recognize breath. Breath comes before words, it comes before analyzing, interpreting. It is something essential to every human being. Doesn't matter where you are, who you are, what you do, how you identify. If you are alive, you have breath. And so it makes sense that the wisdom practices of the world that have us in touch with our breath, that have us noticing breath and breath and breath again, it's so difficult. I am not someone who can sit in meditation for many hours. That is not my practice. I can sit in song. That is my meditative practice. But to sit by myself in a silent retreat for a week, I don't know if anyone in this room has done something like that. Any hands up? Has anyone done a silent retreat? It's my challenge area for myself. Could I do that? I would be very afraid to notice how the committee convenes again. Because apparently it does convene again and again and again. Ad nauseum, I should say. So that is something that I'm going to walk out of Holden with in myself, saying maybe actually a silent retreat is something that I might gift myself, because there are friends of mine who said that there are things that happen when you're in silence, just noticing breath for a week and sometimes more, that can't happen anywhere else. And I haven't experienced that yet in my life. So the Genesis, the origin story of the creation of the human from the land, and there we are, the land. So the land or the earth is deeply, intricately connected to the human. And the relationship of the human to the land, to the earth, is symbiotic. When the land is sick in Torah, the human being or human beings are also sick. In fact, the Bible anthropomorphizes the earth, and the land shall vomit out its inhabitants when you behave in such and such and such a way. And in fact, in the sabbatical years, the Jeremiad, right, there's a phrase, the Jeremiad is, and now the land is going to take its sabbatical because you did not take its sabbatical year on year on year, and you will be vomited out of the earth, and so on and so forth. So the gist of it is that if the human is not in symbiosis with the earth, with the land, then there is something there that is broken. And the antidote to the sense of the human being separate from earth, from the land, is the Sabbath. The Israelite people shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath through the ages as a covenant for all time. It shall be a sign for all time between me and the people of Israel. For 6 days Hashem made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day ceased from work. Shabbat, ceased from work, and then Vayinafash, and was ensouled, was refreshed. What is it, asked the Hasidic masters, that actually refreshes a person on the day of the Sabbath? It's not the time itself, maybe. I mean, it's a wonderful idea to think that you can pass through time as if you're passing through a body of water and you're, you know, you arise refreshed. But that's very hard to access. And therefore, we pass through song. The song line of Shabbat. Shabbat has its own songs, its own nigunim, its own wordless melodies that begin on Friday night, and they close on the with the closing of Sabbath. And for the Hasidim, each had its own rhythm and meter. The Friday night was often very celebratory, and was in C major, or was a more of an upbeat. Whereas at this time, where we are right now, the Shabbos Tish, they're sitting around a table with the light closing in on us. What is that? So there's a beautiful German word that I learned some years ago. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Maybe some of you know it. I'm not even going to pretend that I can spell this right now. Woldem Simkeit. Don't know if anyone's heard this word. Wald means forest. Woldem Simkeit means coming to a particular glade in a forest, sitting down and experiencing solitude. That is what Woldem Simkeit means. I'm going to try. Okay, you know what? I'm going to try. And if there are any, exactly. And if there are any, if there's anyone in the room, I would like to ask for adjustments. Okay, here we go. Wald. Same. Kite. How's that? Did I get it right?
Yeah.
No.
It's an N.
Right.
E-N.
E-N. E-N, yes?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. So learning this word, which is a word that was newer to me because I do not speak German, and this is a word that just absolutely speaks to the centrality of that sense of solitude within community. The idea of coming upon a place, maybe it's this place, as if in a forest, in a glade, sitting down and experiencing not loneliness, but solitude. Mm-hmm. And being able to access that through song. The songs, like the wordless nigunim, craft and create in our imagination these palaces in time, to quote Abraham Joshua Heschel, who in the Sabbath describes this little book by Abraham Joshua Heschel, which is a classic about the Sabbath. He describes the Sabbath as literally a palace in time. It's like a memory palace. And what the songs are doing is they are creating, they are structuring, they are scaffolding an imaginary palace in time. That is what the songs are there to do. They're there to craft the outer contours of the experience. And the ways that you access them, your own unique ways, they are yours. That's why they are wordless, because they're not tethered specifically to any one phrase or a prayer. They are truly universal, truly universal. A biblical scholar whom I've been following for some years and whom I revere and has written some magisterial commentaries on the works of Genesis and Exodus and Numbers and is now working on Leviticus and is now working on Deuteronomy. This is what Aviva Zornberg has to say in Source 7 for those who have the handout. The essential attribute for spiritual health, Rabbi Nachman, who was a later Hasidic master, characteristically declares, is joy. Music arises from joy, but the power of true singing comes from sadness. In every nigun, in every wordless melody, there is the tension of the struggle between life and death, between falling and rising, the tremolo that marks the human voice. This means the affirmation of a line. Okay, so here we go again with the Hebrew. Shira is a song. Okay, so shira, the word shira, S-H-I-R-A-H, shira is song, but shura is a line. So shira, let's say that together, shira,
shira
is a song, and shura,
shura,
shura is a line. And that is where Aviva Zornberg gets her phrase, song line, that there are these threads. There are song lines that thread through the waste places. Both the waste places of Bamidbar, of the wilderness, but also, say the Hasidic masters, the inner waste places, the inner hinterlands, the inner wildernesses. The revelation of a good place, of inspiration and of attraction, if excuse the typo, is not sufficient since it will end. It is the continuum, the vibrating thread that generates true singing. We're not going to sing for 5 hours together. We're not. If there was one person in the room after 5 hours, I would be so impressed. I've done it, and let me tell you, I haven't been on a silent retreat, but oh my word, 5 hours of singing. People come and go in the room, but there is a core that is singing for 5 hours. The same tune. All sorts of things happen in that room. The room vibrates. The threads vibrate. Now, what is it to sing into another faith tradition? So I'm here offering you a Hasidic melody. I am not from the Hasidic lineage. So that's not my background. My background, as I mentioned yesterday, is on one side Yemenite. My family comes from Sana for many, many centuries in Yemen. And on the other hand, from Leipzig and Hamburg and Cologne in Germany. And those are two disparate threads in my life. And yet, for me, I don't feel an imposter sitting around a table, as I have done for many, many years with friends, and leaning into these Hasidic melodies, even though that is not my lineage. And in speaking with some close mentors of mine, there is a great ecumenical spirit about the sharing of song, especially when those songs are not tethered to particular prayers, particular words that are ontologically or theologically constructed within a particular paradigm. And so I hope that this particular nigun, this wordless melody that comes from a newer voice, Joey Wiesenberg, who is in his mid-30s and is traveling the Jewish world, singing these songs with his ensemble. It's his creation. This is his music. And yet, there is so much about this music that is touching on the great Hasidic melodies of old. The song lines, the threads that Joey is able to weave into that experience, for me, they do touch on these old grainy reels that I hear, you know, when we get together and we pull out all the tapes and plug them into the cassette and listen to, you know, the cassette player from 1920s and 1930s, those recordings that when they first came to the US and they began recording these melodies before and during the years of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, and certainly afterwards, in order to protect the melodies that were being lost from many, many communities, small communities across Europe. On the way to Mount Sinai, it seems that the Israelites too must be remusicked. Their music is to be like Miriam's well, a contiguous accompaniment, rolling through vicissitudes, connecting the disjoined moments of joy. The work of Miriam's well is to trace a songline through the 40-year-long indirection, that is the wilderness narrative. Recall Parker J. Palmer's comments from yesterday, for those who were in the room, of getting to the heart of the matter through indirection. The work of the wilderness years was not a shura, a straight line from Egypt to the promised land. It was in fact a wending path. There was ambiguity. There was living with ambiguity. I don't think anyone goes to the doctor to ask to live with ambiguity. We want a clear diagnosis. We want to know exactly what it is that ails us or that we need to deal with. We don't want to have williness. But in our relationships with each other, there is profound ambiguities. Healthy, creative ambiguities. Not ambivalences, different word. Ambiguities. And those ambiguities allow us to ask and clarify questions that don't probe, that don't touch on nerves, but are rather opening, generous questions. The art of living the questions now. And this is a deep practice of living the questions that is remusicked in the language of the Bible in the art of walking through the desert, which is precisely why the Israelites could not just go to, quote-unquote, the promised land. I was talking with one of the other faculty yesterday about this idea of, now you're free, great, how do you behave like free people, right? How do you reset? There's a process, and that process often involves ambiguities and feeling into the spaces and finding the forest glades wherever they are. Before we close, I want to pair two sources together. The first is the piece of art that is at the frontispiece. So where is this? I don't know if anyone's been to Liverpool. It's not on the map. Anyone read Bill Bryson, Notes from a Small Island? Oh, okay, great, excellent. Liverpool is on the map. Liverpool is in the north of England, and if you were to go to Liverpool, even today, you would see this installation, this work. It's 100 cast iron figures of Anthony Gormley's body. This is Anthony Gormley's body. So what he did is a practice that he had of casting his body first in wax and then in lead and in bronze and in different materials. And then these cast iron figures were installed on the beach, on Crosby Beach, and are still there. And there are they are magical to look at. I mean, it depends on the light. Many of them are now painted, gaudy colours and all sorts of crazy things that people do to, you know, to blank canvases. Some of them are quite interesting. So this is one view, photograph, that I really love, of looking out across the expanse, right, across the sound. These figures that are alone and yet not alone. They are alone in their situatedness, but they are not alone because they are standing with others. And standing with these figures is actually quite a powerful experience. Mm-hmm. You imagine as if you were stood there with 100 other people. If you allowed your imagination to go, you could imagine standing in solidarity with these nameless figures, all of whom are one person. The breath, the neshima. That if we could imagine that one person has in them one breath, we imagine that others have in them the same breath. For me, that's a powerful metaphor, because there is one part of our breath, our communication, that is difficult, and that is sorrow. And this is the time of the Shabbos closing, the Sabbath closing, that is a little bit sorrowful, because we're going to say goodbye to Shabbat. We're going to have to say goodbye to this day in which we're making space for stillness. And so there is a little bit of sorrow. Sorrow is so woven to Source 8, Christian Wyman, My Bright Abyss. Sorrow is so woven through us, so much a part of our souls, or at least any understanding of our souls that we're able to attain, that every experience is dyed in its colour. That is why, even in moments of joy, part of that joy is the seams of awe. Well, I didn't know that I was going to be at Holden saying this, but the seams of awe that are our sorrow. They burn darkly and beautifully in the midst of joy, and they make joy the complete experience that it is, but they still burn. Let's take 5 minutes. Can you switch the lights, please?
Da 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 da
Enjoy lunch.
Thank you. Thank you.